A European Union summit is about to get started in Kyiv.
Our presence in Kyiv today gives a very clear signal. The whole of the European Union is in this with Ukraine for the long haul.
Plus, I talk with a former ambassador to Ukraine about Kyiv's request for more weapons, including missiles and jets.
And the next thing is exactly right, is fighter jets. Fighter jets. There's no reason not to. The goal is to enable the Ukrainians to push the Russians out of their country.
And later in the program, a daring rescue of a young girl from Bakhmut. Today is Thursday, February 2nd. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. European Union Commission President Ursula von der Leyen is in Kyiv ahead of an EU summit on Friday. The meeting is being held in Ukraine's capital as a show of solidarity. She held a press conference late Thursday with President Zelensky.
Europe has been by Ukraine's side since day one, because we know that the future of our continent is being written here. We know that you are fighting for more than yourselves. What is at stake is freedom. This is a fight of democracies against authoritarian regimes. Putin tries to deny the existence of Ukraine, but what he risks instead is the future of Russia. Our presence in Kyiv today gives a very clear signal. The whole of the European Union is in this with Ukraine for the long haul. And we will stand up for Ukraine as we stand up for the fundamental rights and the respect of the international law.
At the press conference with President Zelensky, von der Leyen previewed some of the coming economic measures the EU will take against Russia to continue to make it difficult for Putin to fund the invasion.
And today, Russia is paying a heavy price as our sanctions are eroding its economy, throwing it back by a generation. The price cap on crude oil already costs Russia around 160 million euros a day. And we will keep on turning up the pressure further. We will introduce with our G7 partners an additional price cap on Russian petroleum products. And by the 24th of February, exactly 1 year since the invasion started, we aim to have the 10th package of sanctions in place.
In addition to economic support and military aid, von der Leyen said the EU is also committed to helping Ukraine prosecute Russia for alleged war crimes and violations of international law.
And Russia must be held accountable in courts for its odious crimes. Prosecutors from Ukraine and the European Union are already working together. We are collecting evidence. And as a first step, I'm pleased to announce that an international center for the prosecution of the crime of aggression in Ukraine will be set up in The Hague.
Von der Leyen also complimented President Zelensky on Kyiv's anti-corruption measures and other efforts to join the European Union.
Dear Volodymyr, your stamina and your people's stamina and your determination to join the European Union is impressive. You prepared your application for the European Union membership brilliantly. I know it by experience. You became a candidate country while fighting an invasion. You continue to make impressive progress to meet the 7 steps of the Commission's opinion. I'm comforted to see that your anti-corruption bodies are on alert and effective in detecting corruption cases. I also commend you on reacting so rapidly at the political level to make sure that the fight against corruption is delivering tangible results and is further stepped up.
That's European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen in Kyiv on Thursday, with President Zelensky ahead of the EU summit. For more on the summit as it happens, visit us online at voanews.com. And with that EU summit in Kyiv beginning on Friday and an increase in fighting expected in the spring, Ukraine again is making the case to allies that it needs additional and more sophisticated weapons. Karen Chamas has the story.
Ukraine's government is pushing for even more Western military aid, as the warring sides are expected to launch new offensives as soon as winter ends. Although Ukraine has already won pledges of tanks, the embattled nation wants more. Kyiv is now asking for fighter jets. President Joe Biden has ruled out providing F-16s to Ukraine. During a trip to the Philippines, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said that American assistance will strengthen Ukraine's military ability through military supplies and training.
We're focused on providing Ukraine the capability that it needs to be effective in its upcoming anticipated counteroffensive in the spring.
Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov described reports of new U.S. military assistance to Ukraine as a direct path to inciting tensions and taking escalation to a new level. Peskov also said that the help from the US will not change the course of events, but just require more effort on the part of the Russians. I'm Karen Chamas.
Ambassador William B. Taylor is Vice President for Russia and Europe at the US Institute of Peace. In 2019, he served as Chargé d'Affaires of the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv. He was U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine from 2006 to 2009. We spoke about Kyiv's request for more weapons, including jets.
Steve, I think the Ukrainians are fighting for us. They're fighting for themselves, obviously. They're fighting for their country. If they stop fighting or if we stop supplying them with the means to fight, there will not be a Ukraine. So they're fighting for their nation, for their independence, for their freedom, and they're fighting for our security, it turns out. So I think we should provide them everything they need. Give them the tools. They're not asking us for soldiers. They're not asking for pilots. What they're asking for are the tools. They're asking, as you say, they've been asking for tanks for a long time. We finally got there. We're late, but we finally got there. They've been asking for long-range artillery for a long time. We finally got there. We got given the HIMARS. We now all know what HIMARS are, and this long-range artillery, these rocket artillery. We should go the next step, and sooner rather than late. We should not take so long to make this decision. We should go the next step on the rocket artillery and go to these so-called ATACMs. These are the long-range artillery that gets out to 200 kilometers a long range to be able to push the Russians back. That's the goal, Steve. The goal is, of all these weapon systems, it's not just what weapon system to send them, it is what they want to do with them. And what the Ukrainians want to do with these weapon systems is push the Russians out of their country. So yes, I would say yes to ATACMs, these long range artillery. It's a great move on the tanks. They just need to come quickly. And it's mainly the Leopards, the Leopards, that are going to come the most quickly. The Abrams opened the door, but they're going to take some time. But the Leopards can go right away from a lot of different European countries. And the next thing is exactly right, is fighter jets. Fighter jets. There's no reason not to. That will, again, the goal is to enable the Ukrainians to push the Russians out of their country. Ukrainians are not interested in attacking into Russia unless it's against a military target that supports the Russian military effort. The Ukrainians only want to push the Russians out of their country, and jets are the next thing. And we shouldn't wait around. The pattern has been the Ukrainians ask, we say first no, and then we say, well, we're thinking about it, and then finally we get there and say yes. We should go straight to yes on the jets right now.
So early on in the answer to my question, you said the Ukrainians are fighting for us.
Yep.
How so? Why does the U.S. care what goes on over there?
This is a great question. It's an important one, and it is a decisive one. We should care for two main big reasons. There are other reasons that we can talk about. The two big reasons are kind of the strategic reason, the national security, world order reasons, and then the moral reasons. So the world order and on our security reasons, the big strategic questions, the Russians are trying to take Ukraine. They're trying to absorb Ukraine. Putin doesn't think the Ukraine's really even a country, and he just wants to bring it back into the Russian Empire, which means that the Russian Empire expanding again, is would then be threatening to our allies, indeed to us. It'll be threatening to NATO, to the NATO alliance. Then if the Russians are able to take Ukraine, as they clearly have said they're trying to do, then they will be threatening, they will be right on the border threatening the Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. They'll be threatening Poland. They'll be threatening our East European NATO members, and that threat is a threat to us. So they are. So the Ukrainians are defending our security, our NATO security, our NATO allied security. So that's the strategic argument, that is the Ukrainians are fighting for us so that we in NATO don't have to fight the Russians when they expand into, when they try to expand into NATO. There's a moral argument, though, Steve, and that is we are outraged. The Ukrainians are outraged and we are outraged at the horror that the Russians are inflicting on Ukrainian civilians. The horror that we see in Bucha and Irpin, in Kharkiv, in Lyman, in Izum, in Kherson, in Mariupol. We have seen what the Russians do when they occupy Ukrainian territory. They commit war crimes. They commit atrocities. It's rape. It is torture. It is murder. They're capturing, they're abducting Ukrainian children and sending them back into Russia, into Russia families. This is genocide, Steve. So this is a moral argument. We have a moral feeling, a stance, a moral imperative that we oppose this kind of crime.
There are a bunch of places in the world where a lot of these atrocities are going on. Thinking of the Rohingya in Myanmar, thinking of a few places, civil wars in Africa, where these kinds of crimes against humanities are occurring. Why aren't we intervening there, but we are in Ukraine?
So we're not intervening in Ukraine with our troops. We are supporting the Ukrainians with the tools that they are asking for, and we talked about that. And you're right. This is not the Ukraine is not the only place where atrocities are taking place. And we should, for the same moral reasons that I outlined before, we should have the same concern about people being killed and genocide taking place in other parts of the world that we do in Ukraine as well. I agree with that. I agree with that. Ukraine is putting up the fight that we are supporting in our own interest and our own defense, our interests, our security is challenged in Europe like nowhere else. I mean, we have identified our Defense Department, our National Security Council, our government has identified Russia as the acute threat to our security, the U.S. security around the world. China is the long-term challenge, but we have acknowledged, we recognize our strategy has concluded that Russia is the strategic, is the immediate threat, is the acute threat in the word of the Pentagon documents. And that's why we are supporting the Ukrainians when they defend themselves and defend us from that most acute threat.
That's Ambassador William B. Taylor from the U.S. Institute of Peace, where he's Vice President for Russia and Europe. He was U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine in 2006 to 2009. He served as Charge d'Affaires at the embassy in Kyiv in 2019. We'll hear part two of my conversation with him on the next program. You're listening to Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Commissioners and other dignitaries have already started to arrive in Kyiv for the EU summit that begins Friday. Their arrival comes as an apartment building in Kramatorsk is bombed. We turn to Anna Chernikova in Kyiv for the latest.
The city of Kyiv and Ukraine in general is getting ready for the summit, for Ukraine-EU summit, which is scheduled for tomorrow. And already today, there are meetings of the Ukrainian officials with European representatives. So the EU delegation that arrived yesterday includes 16 European commissioners, and is headed by the head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen. So today we know that President Zelensky had a meeting already with all the members of the team, of the committee, and with Ms. Ursula von der Leyen herself. And what we're hearing from the Ukrainian officials is that the talks are already taking place. So Ukrainian side and European side, they continue to, well, they finalize this, preparations for tomorrow's summit and finalize some questions and details. And according to the Prime Minister of Ukraine, during these consultations, Ukrainian side and European side discussed the progress that Ukraine has done in this year. And he mentioned a couple of achievements, such as the integration of the energy system to ENTSO-E system, and also the number of other achievements that Ukraine has done in this year. And of course, tomorrow we will hear the opinion of the European side, of the European Commission, on how Ukraine fulfilled 7 main recommendations by the European Commission. And this would be definitely the crucial part and the most important part in terms of Ukrainian future integration and future tasks for Ukraine. But again, Ukrainian officials, including Prime Minister of Ukraine, mentioned that Ukraine is working hard on fulfillment of these, particularly these 7 main recommendations, because there were a lot of course, work done and a lot of questions still are remaining. So definitely everyone is excited about tomorrow and excited to hear the analysis by the European Commission on how Ukraine is doing and to hear what's Ukraine potential in this quite a long-term procedure and long-term route to the European Union.
And of course, the reason everyone is in Kyiv is because of the war, because of the Russian invasion, and that's still going on. Understand it was a bad night in Kramatorsk. Can you tell us what happened there and what else is happening on the front lines?
Well, yes, unfortunately, yesterday it was a very tragic, another tragic attack by Russian forces. This time, the main victim was the city of Kramatorsk in the Donetsk region. The city is located very close to the city of Izum, actually, which is in the Kharkiv region. So it's kind of, quite deep into the Donetsk region, close to the area of the Kharkiv region. And yesterday at around 15 minutes to 10, in the evening, local time, Iskander missile hit residential building. And for the moment, we know about 3 victims and 20 people who are wounded. But I should say that, of course, the city of Kramatorsk, a lot of people left, a lot of people evacuated, a lot of people who had this opportunity. They, found some ways to stay in a safer place for some time. So this is probably the reason why we have not as many victims as we had in the city of Dnipro, for example. But still, unfortunately, the debris, so the rescue operation is still ongoing, and all the Ukrainian authorities who are supposed to remove the debris, they're still working on that. So we are still waiting for the final numbers and final results. And just to add, today, during the day, it was another missile attack on the city of Kramatorsk. So these 2 days in a row was really tragic for the city and for the region. And unfortunately, we know about victims as well. However, we don't have final numbers yet.
Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
Halnya Danichenko was 8 months pregnant when she was rescued from the besieged city of Bakhmut in Ukraine. But her six-year-old daughter and the girl's grandparents were left behind. Reuters was there as a Ukrainian police rescue unit finds and reunites the family. Reuters' Matthew Laratonda has the story.
This is a story about a Ukrainian family and the mission to reunite them. A mother, 8 months pregnant, rescued from Bakhmut, a city under siege. But her six-year-old daughter, left behind with her grandparents and great-grandmother. Reuters is there as police go looking for them 2 days later. This evacuation team calls itself the White Angels. There's the girl, Arina. Police are asking who she's living with. She confirms it's her grandparents. Are there any other children she can play with? No. This mission's risky. That boom was an explosion. It's time to go, and she's starting to cry. She needs a little coaxing, too. There's more explosions as she's given a helmet. What about great-granny, she asks. She's coming too. The others are staying behind. It's difficult. She has child-sized body armor on. It says children on it. This is a reality of the war. And now the moment. There's mom. We're now in the city of Slovyansk. The mother, Halina Danilchenko, is thanking the police. Arina says a shell exploded in their yard. Her mother was so worried. Pavlo Diachenko is a communications officer with the Bakhmut Police Department and a White Angels member.
Around 200 children are still in Bakhmut, according to our preliminary count. We're meeting the families that are still there and are talking to them, trying to convince them to agree to be evacuated, either the whole family or the children, because children must live in a peaceful environment.
Millions of people like this have been displaced in Ukraine. The fighting for Bakhmut is among the worst.
That's Reuters' Matthew Laratonda reporting. Time now for a fact check with Polygraph.info. Polygraph.info is a production of The Voice of America and tracks misinformation and disinformation around the world.
On January 18th, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov claimed the Western coalition that's helping Ukraine wants to annihilate the Russian people. Lavrov likened it to the Holocaust. Quote, "The United States has created a coalition of nearly all European member states of NATO and the EU, with the old aim of finally solving the Russian question, like Hitler, who sought a final solution to the Jewish question. That is false." The Ukraine Defense Contact Group is a global coalition to coordinate military assistance to Ukraine after Russia invaded its neighbor on February 24th. The group has never planned or discussed exterminating the Russian people. Moreover, condemnation of Russia's brutal invasion has not been limited to the U.S. and European countries. 141 countries approved a UN General Assembly resolution demanding that Russian troops immediately withdraw. Dozens of countries imposed sanctions against Russia. The, quote, "final solution" was the phrase Nazi Germany used for the mass murder of Jews in the Second World War. The European Jewish Congress called Lavrov's use of the term, quote, "shameful." Congress President Ariel Musikant said, quote, "This is Holocaust distortion at its most basic level, and we call on Mr. Lavrov to unequivocally apologize and withdraw these comments."
And that'll do it for us today. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.